Hello and welcome to the nautical, amphibious, maritime world of Lieutenant Columbo. I'm Mac, and with me as always is Ben.
Hey Mac.
Hey Ben. This week we're taking a look at the final episode of the fifth season, Last Salute to the Commodore. This episode stars John Denner as a Commodore who is murdered. Now, the reason I'm introducing like that instead of the normal way I do it,
right,
is that the big conceit of this episode is that you don't know who committed the crime until the end. That's right, the big twist on this one is that it's just like every other detective show on television ever and every other crime story, period.
Only slightly less good, because that's not the format or conceit of this show.
Yes. Appearing in this episode as the killer, maybe, are returning favorites Robert Vaughn, mm-hmm. Wilfred Hyde White, and Fred Draper. The other main departure in this episode is that Columbo is joined in his investigation by returning favorite Sergeant George Kramer, played by Bruce Kirby, as well as newcomer Dennis Dugan as Sergeant Theodore Mac Albinsky. This mess of an episode was directed but does not star Columbo's favorite Patrick McGoohan and was written by veteran Columbo writer Jackson Gillis. So what happened?
So what the fuck?
So what happened?
I have a theory if you want to hear it.
Go ahead.
I mean, first, let me get this out of the way.
Yeah.
It's not a great episode.
It's not a good episode.
It's an okay episode. I don't think... Okay. I've only seen...
Yes.
37 episodes.
So far. Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's the worst thing I've seen so far.
Really? Okay.
Now, I couldn't tell you what the least memorable episode is.
Sure.
You know, there are definitely other ones I feel like are a bigger... But in fairness, that is because I spent this episode trying to figure out what the fuck was up with this episode.
Yeah.
So I feel like that colors it a little bit. And I recognize that.
Yep.
But I do want to say, I don't think it's the absolute worst. And when I say that, I mean that in a... I don't necessarily think I'm going to say skip it.
Really?
And that's because it's a fascinating train wreck.
Yeah. Well,
but the reason for that is I think what happened here is this is Patty McGee's like third time around, right?
It's his
second time
director,
directing.
Yes.
Is it his second time or third time directing?
Second time directing.
Yeah. Right. But it's his third time doing anything with the show.
Yes.
Because he guested, and then he came back and guested and directed.
Right.
And now he's just directing. And I think that what happened was they made the mistake of giving him more creative control.
It's entirely, that's entirely possible.
Because remember the last one, he is riddled with little nods to The Prisoner.
Yeah.
It's also about a dude who's like a secret agent and a you know, massive, you know, corrupt criminal, whatever.
Yeah. I definitely don't think that we can lay it at the hands of the writer or the feet of the writer.
Well, because it's not the only episode.
No, Jackson Gillis previously did Suitable for Framing, which was very enjoyable.
Uh-huh.
Short Fuse with Roddy McDowell.
Yeah.
Very good. Dagger of the Mind, which I think... is kind of a controversial episode, but I know we loved it.
Yeah, it's a solid.
Requiem for Falling Star, mm-hmm. The Most Dangerous Match, which is iffy, but...
I love that you have this list.
I have them all right here. Double Shock.
Yeah.
Double Shock is one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah.
And Lovely But Lethal, Troubled Waters, and so...
So you can't blame him.
No, all of the ones that he did before were, at the very least, competent, well-plotted and well-performed
and this,
episodes.
This fits with my theory. I really think that this is a question of they gave McGoohan a long leash.
Yeah, and he proceeded to hang himself with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because he really saw a bunch of things and was really excited about trying something new and exciting,
mm-hmm.
you know, and mashing it up and doing something interesting. And like, there's a whole vibe of the thing I thought when I kept seeing Columbo touching people.
Yes, he's very handsy in this episode.
He's not just handsy. He's like uncomfortably close.
Yes.
Like with Vaughn, he is constantly like getting into his personal space and hugging him and stroking his shoulder and like all of this making him deliberately uncomfortable.
Columbo is constantly like touching someone's shoulder and then like leaning and basically putting his chin on his hand.
Yep.
In their ear.
There's all kinds of weird shit in this one. Like so much of it that I just like, if I wrote it all down, I wouldn't have time to talk about anything else. But it's important because to me, it's such a, like, it's a departure of how Columbo normally does that. Like he usually rattles people by the timing of asking questions. And in this one, he seems to focus more on physically rattling people.
Yeah.
And like
true.
With Vaughn, you can see that it is the, I mean, at some point we're going to have to talk about the plot, I guess. But with Vaughn, you can see that there is this element of trying to shake him up and watching for reactions, you know? And it like, McGowan took it and made this a physical thing instead of a kind of a verbal sparring or anything else like that. And it reminds me of... if you've ever watched any documentaries or read anything about Huey Long, the fucking Louisiana senator from like the 30s who was assassinated.
I'm very interested to hear where this is going.
No. So Huey Long had this kind of reputation for like not ordering at restaurants, and he would eat off of other people's plates, and he'd do all these things that were just kind of weird and would throw people off their game.
That sounds insane, but okay.
Yes. And I have a lot of thoughts about that, but my point is this Columbo is like that. Mm. Like, that's the vibe that I got from this. This is the moment that I started seeing this behavior. I was like, this is like sociopath level, like Huey Long shit.
It feels like he's not playing the same character he was playing in the previous episodes.
There's bits of it, but he is not.
It feels
not,
like he's playing a different guy.
No, he's getting directed in a very different way.
Yeah.
And that's the... I mean, that's basically my thesis here. I think
you're right, because, I mean, also visually, there's a lot of, like weird tracking shots, or, like, there's, like, a one scene that's handheld in the bar when they're confronting the wife.
Oh, my God, where they're walking into the camera, and so she's just looking right at you, and there's, like...
Bruno Kirby bumps the camera and looks at it, which is very jarring, but they left it in for
and
some
they left
reason.
You know what? I'm going to be honest. I think Patty probably really liked that.
Yeah, maybe. There's also a couple points where you can see that dialogue has been edited out, where someone is clearly about to say something and then they're cut away, which is crazy.
And cut the sound out and either not replaced it or...
It's crazy to see... think that they cut things out considering how much filler dialogue is in this episode.
There's a lot of exposition.
Yeah, it's 90% people explaining something that in a previous episode of Columbo, you would just know by look. Like, you wouldn't even have to have someone explain it out loud or even say that it's something to be explained.
Right. So, question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think that that kind of repetition and back and forth is actually in this to try and throw you onto the sort of red herring direction that the whole episode is kind of trying to lead us down for so long?
No, because they're doing it at the very
end. I mean, they're doing it constantly.
I guess, but the thing is that I feel like this we talked previously in an episode, I don't remember which one, it was a while ago, but we talked about how Columbo as a series respects your intelligence. Yeah. And what I definitely feel like is, even if you are framing a person for murder in an episode, like even if, and not the characters, but the framing of the episode is that this person did it, but that's a fake out.
Right.
I feel like... they're explaining so much that I feel like they think I'm an idiot because I can't like pick up on very simple things like the watch is broken, therefore the watch would not tick.
Right.
Which means we replaced the springs, which is why it is now ticking. Like,
right.
I'd need maybe three words out of that.
No, we get it, Columbo. You fix the fucking watch.
All you have to say is that the watch was broken.
Right.
And so but it's ticking now, and that's all I need.
So here's the thing, though. This is post The Prisoner.
Yeah.
I don't know how familiar you are
not
with the original
all.
Series.
Completely not at all.
So a big thing about the series was not just giving you concrete answers.
Right.
And so the ending of it is very much open to interpretation.
Right. Also, that was directed by Patrick McGowan.
Yeah,
right?
that's his baby.
Yeah.
He started out as the star, and
then he sort of took over the show.
The whole show was always the thing he wanted to do after he got off of doing four seasons of Danger Man or Secret Agent, if you like.
I don't care about either, but sure.
Yeah. It's on, word for it. I don't know. I think it's on Netflix right now. Anyway. Okay. Irrelevant. But my point is that ending and the sort of vagueness and the fact that it doesn't just neatly wrap up everything for you so enraged people that he actually had to go in hiding for a while.
Really?
Yeah. So I wonder if this episode is like, y'all are fucking stupid. Like, you know, if it's a reaction to...
I mean, I guess, but I don't... Maybe I don't like it. I don't like it when a show thinks I'm stupid.
No.
even if he had a good reason to do so.
I'm sorry. Let me pause here, Mac.
Yeah.
I am not trying to justify
it. Okay.
I am just trying to explain what I think probably is the background on where McGowan's mind was.
Yeah, maybe.
Why he made these bad choices.
It's hard to say, you know...
Because there's so much where it feels...
Yeah.
Is it shitty of me to say arty? I realize I used air quotes and nobody can see that. But like, you know, about
100%
it.
100% that's what I mean.
It's got that vibe of like the sort of like try hard in a format that sort of doesn't understand.
There's too much air when there shouldn't be air. Like there's too much sort of like quiet moments that are like just staring at nothing,
right?
And not in an interesting, like there's a scene early on where there's a slow pan across the harbor, but it's so dark
that you can't make anything
all
out.
You're seeing is little glimmers of light as it pans across.
Well, and that pans to Robert Vaughn's face in the window,
right,
which is very much that moment of like, then we go to him cleaning up after the dead body.
And I'm sure maybe it was a thing where they filmed it and it just didn't turn out in the shot and it didn't work properly.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's when you go shoot an insert and you get something else.
You shoot it in daylight
so committed to like this sort of, you know, veritas, like this sort of feeling of realism, maybe.
And, you know, I think you're dead on that, because that's a big vibe that I got from this episode, is this sense of authenticity.
Right.
Like chasing that. And, you know, and it's like, and in my head, I can picture I guess it's McGowan in this, you know, in this instance, but I can picture that, like, we're going to do it this way and it's going to be real, man. And this is like, that reminds me of, a story that I'm not going to tell now, but involves like vampire LARPers and real vampire society, and you can fill in the blanks.
Sure. But it takes me back to all the way back to Murder by the Book.
Okay.
And while I recognize that episode was directed by Steven Spielberg, one of the greatest directors of all time.
Certainly
in that era. But there are has a very naturalistic feel to it.
Yeah.
Where the dialogue is very naturalistic. But this one, it's going for naturalism, but at the same time, the actors are that. Well, I mean, it's going for sort of like this is happening in a space.
Right.
But it's also so huge. All of the actors are making the weirdest, largest. It's like every time someone did something, Patty said to him, go bigger.
Yeah.
Go as big as you possibly can. Do like just, okay, you're drunk. Be so drunk. Be unbelievably completely drunk.
Right.
Fill the room with your drunkenness.
Be like, what is the comparison? Like drunker than Lucille.
Yes.
Like in Arrested Development.
Oh,
like,
I mean, there's definitely definitely shades of that. And the woman has a very similar sort of look to the actors. I can't remember.
Oh, Jessica Walter.
Jessica Walter. Yeah. She has a very similar look.
Absolutely. I think this is the authenticity thing. The thing that I guess I want to make a distinction about is I don't feel that it is necessarily, I don't know, realism or authenticity, but just in the like, no, we're going to get these fucking nautical terms right.
Yeah.
We're going to get into the details of what it's like to make boats.
Oh, boy. And, you know, there's so much boat talk that essentially doesn't amount to anything, where they're on the boat and like the Coast Guard comes in and all they really need to say is that he was doing this thing and then the arm came over and hit him. And that's all you need. And that explanation basically... Take what I've said, add three or four more sentences to it, and you're done.
Fill in jargon for the actual things.
But that scene is like a 10-minute scene of them on the boat, and it is really long, and it doesn't establish anything beyond what I've just said.
Right, and it's very... Well, it's like, at most you can say it's got character... And
it's a lot of Columbo like sort of fumbling around the boat and everybody sort of following him around.
Him running back and forth and grabbing onto people as he goes by.
And what I guess was supposed to be comedic, and I certainly laughed a lot, but it was the laughter of being uncomfortable watching something like this is happening, this is taking so long, and they've invested so much energy into this, and it's nothing. It's just nothing.
Should we maybe theoretically talk about the baseline of the plot?
I guess. Okay,
you want to do this or should I?
I can do it. So the Commodore, as in the last salute to the Commodore, he is not a military Commodore.
No.
He is a magnate of a shipbuilding company.
He's been building boats all his life.
Yes.
He is the best sailor that anybody's ever seen.
He's a great man, we're told, even though he is basically just a huge crank.
Yeah, he shows up and he is a cranky asshole.
90% of the time that we see.
Because his daughter is a fucking drunk and she married kind of
everybody acts like he's being very out of character, but from what I can tell, that does not seem like that's
It seems like completely in line. I mean, it's mostly like he shows up and he's immediately like
he hates his entire family.
Yeah, well, it's like so, and in that part, it's they're attempting to establish that, you know, it's this big soiree and bash where like he's supposed to go fucking schmooze with like big ticket customers because Vaughn's character Clay Charlie has like been growing the business, which is to say
putting it in, making luxury yacht kind of
stuff. Turning it into kind of a bigger industry thing rather than like a tight ship that runs profitable and is streamlined.
Yeah, it's very clear that the Commodore just wants to make sailing vessels like his own and not big fancy yachts like the one that Charlie has, which is where they're having a party.
Right. Basically what it boils down to is he doesn't want to sell out and go corporate.
Yeah.
And that's what he's stomping his feet around and complaining about.
Yeah.
And so then he gets murdered after he basically calls everybody a sponge. And, you know, this all sounds real familiar. And so then it cuts to that weird long panning shot over the harbor at night where you can't see anything to Robert Vaughn poking his head out of a window. And then we see him cleaning up a murder. Ostensibly, Robert Vaughn did the murder.
Yes.
You know, and does all of this and then takes the Commodore's boat out and dumps the Commodore's corpse over the side and then uses a scuba tank to swim back and not be noticed.
Right.
So that's the basic. And then
we learn later that he did it because he thinks his wife murdered
her dad. Right. Yep. And so we're kind of fumbling along that. And she's such a blackout drunk that she doesn't actually remember what happened.
Theoretically done it, maybe.
And right. And so they kind of let us run along with, oh, Vaughn did it because he's been running the company.
But I feel
and
like
doesn't
that brooch wanna... is kind of, they're pretty quick to kind
pretty
of
pretty quick shoot. To start throwing some stuff on. No, yeah. Absolutely. And then they really take the hard turn towards the daughter. I mean, it's Mrs. Clay, but I wrote her name down somewhere.
Jessica. No.
I think you're right.
No, Joanna. No,
Joanna. That's it. But yeah, so they start throwing it at Joanna, and then all of a sudden, all of that shit falls apart, and then we get a fucking Poirot parlor scene.
Well,
at the
because
end.
Robert Vaughn is murdered halfway through, and then who did it?
Well, it's got to be her.
Yeah, and then yes, it all ends in a. I mean, even talking about the specifics of the catch
makes you mad, doesn't it?
I just don't think it's good at all.
I mean, so here's the thing, right? It's a show that never relied on this conceit.
Yeah.
And it's a show that very rarely relied on piles and piles of red herrings.
Right.
And all of a sudden you have this episode that is just a dozen red herrings.
Yeah.
And then like Poirot, you know, finish where
a literal drawing room.
It's an actual like drawing room finish.
Yeah.
And it's one where he doesn't know who did it by that point.
He does.
Well,
no, he definitely does because he has all the evidence. He just needs.
Right.
He just has the final thing, which
catch. Yeah.
I don't even think is a very good catch.
It's weak. It's weak, and part of that is also
all of the evidence that they have leading up to the quote-unquote final piece of evidence, the watch, which we'll talk about in a sec, all of the evidence that they have leading up to that is much more compelling evidence.
Oh, of course.
Like the fact that so it turns out Swanee did it.
Yeah.
Swanee is the uncle. Who's the Fred Draper part.
Right.
No, he's the nephew.
He's the nephew of the Commodore, and he's the cousin of Joanna. Right.
Yeah, even though he and the Commodore appear to be the same age.
Yeah, it seemed like they're pretty similar ages. Yeah, and like he's basically in the opening shot driving a water taxi named Titanic.
Like he's like a genial sort of party guy.
Yeah, who.
I think he lives off an allowance from his uncle, and he doesn't have a real job. So we later learned that... So at the very end, we learned that Lisa... who is barely a character in this.
Who is someone who, that's what it was. She's at that party.
She's at the party at the very beginning.
At the very beginning, but like she just kind of quietly lines. Behind not the foreman, but the guy who runs the boatyard.
He's the guy who runs the boatyard. We meet the foreman later. And that's a fun, Wayne. That's a fun scene.
The foreman scene is... that's that same weird authenticity / realism / whatever, where it's like, it's a boatyard, so it's going to be loud, so let's do all
this. They did it in like two or three takes. Like
it's just this will be, this will be humorous / realistic.
It certainly
him
was
yelling at the guy on the boat rather than, no, let's walk into a fucking office.
Just come down here for five seconds and we'll have a discussion like human beings.
It's a murder investigation.
I'm from the police.
Yeah.
it's
hello, Mr. The Police.
It's a little Law and Order moment where it's like a guy still on the job.
Yeah. I ain't got time for your bullshit. It's too New York over here.
Yeah, I knew her. She came in here all the time. She used to sit on that stool in the corner. She'd always order a vodka and soda. But that night, she was real concerned about something.
You got to
do it. Looking at a watch.
I'm sorry, Mac, but you know the laws. You know the laws of Law and Order. Now you got to do an iced tea voice.
I'm not legally allowed to do my iced tea voice on podcasts anymore. There's that injunction in place, and you know that. you really threw me. So Fred Draper, Swanee is the murderer. And the reason for that is he's Lisa, this non-entity.
Right. So hold on.
Let me
lay this one out. So she's silent and there at the party. And then Joanna makes a crack to Charlie about like, oh, that's why you're staying late, staying late at the office.
Yeah, she works in the office. It's unclear exactly who
she is. So from the very beginning, they try to throw us off the scent of this character being important.
And then later this woman is...
hanging out on top of the wedding gift boat.
Charlie's boat.
Yeah, doing transcendental meditation.
Right.
While Columbo... like gets in her personal space and then tries to mimic what she's doing, and it's like, I know that it is supposed to be a comedic scene and all that.
It's definitely supposed to be.
Right. He can't actually fold his legs up in the lotus. I get it. That's the same joke I have always seen about people trying to meditate.
Yeah.
Like it's literally a trope. I'm sure it wasn't at this point, but
this was the beginning of, TM and yoga being a craze in the United States. So
sure. Right.
It wasn't not a joke, but
my only question is, so I know that McGowan was like a fierce Catholic. It makes me wonder if he was like trying to shit on TM
possibly.
So like that's the time that we see her.
See her twice before the finale.
Yeah.
We see her at the party. We see her meditating.
And that's it.
And then at the very end,
Columbo brings her in.
And it turns out she was going to marry the Commodore. Ah!
Yeah.
And he was going to name his boat Lisa S. He was going to stencil.
Right.
For some reason, he decided...
her name onto his boat.
For some reason, instead of like getting a professional painter, which he was a guy who...
He did everything. He built his own boats. He worked on his own boat.
But then he would like get yellow paint, like the nice yellow paint, and do like a little.
I mean, he'd do whatever the fuck he want because it was his boat.
However, if
the boat didn't have a name, that is. My understanding is it's generally one, really not great to take out a boat that doesn't have a name, and two, it's worse to rename a boat. Like that's super bad luck.
Is it? Well, he never named that one.
Yeah.
Legal? Do you need a boat? Does a boat need a name? I guess it needs a designation.
Well, it has to have a designation
from the sail.
But I don't think it has to have a name. I think that's just kind of a... But again, like, I don't know all sailor superstitions. I just know enough to know the renaming a boat is bad luck.
Well, it wasn't named. That's established.
Well, that's why I'm saying I kind of suspect that it means, oh, if your boat doesn't have a name, then that's a problem too.
Mm. Well, he was going to name it after Lisa, his child bride.
Right.
Who is... I would say conservatively 50 years younger than him.
Uh-huh.
But she didn't want the money.
And insisted, like, she wouldn't marry him unless...
She's down to earth because she's doing TM earlier. So, she didn't want the money, so he was going to donate all... He was going to sell everything.
He's going to explicitly state in his will that she got nothing, and also...
Well, that everybody gets nothing.
Well, yeah, basically write everyone out of the will, sell the company.
Except for the daughter, who would get a stipend.
A stipend, yeah.
And then everybody else gets nothing. So Swanee, the lawyer, presumably does... I mean, the lawyer gets paid either way. But Swanee and
Joanna,
everybody gets basically nothing.
Yeah, basically everybody, and basically the company would get screwed because they'd get...
But,
sold off.
I mean, but more or less, the only person that actually fucks with is Swanee, because Joanna's still getting her trust.
She's still getting
trust.
Something.
She's getting a trust.
Right.
It's not going to be the huge thing, but she just likes to drink. Like, it seems like all she does is drink anyway, so it probably wouldn't change her life dramatically.
Doesn't seem like it.
It would definitely fuck Charlie over, because he would no longer be in charge of the company.
Well, but, if the company gets sold, like, unless the Commodore fired him.
He might go with, who knows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, Charlie would probably be fine.
He'd probably be okay. Yeah, but it's basically just Swanee who gets really fucked. And either way, Charlie would still be living with his wife who would get this money.
But also, let's be clear.
Yeah.
This, like, for all the over-explaining of everything else, mm-hmm. the whole, hey, we found these stencils, it spells sales, also there's a period. Like, you've given us her name fucking once.
Yeah.
Like, it's so out of left field episode.
The scene where they give us her name happens immediately prior to the stencils. That's really the only thing you've got. And,
but my point is, everything else is like, let's just fucking lay it on you, four times in a row.
But even when they're explaining the stencils thing, they over-explain that. So,
and it's still just like, guys, stop. Just... No, it's, well, I mean, because it goes from that to like, well, here's this twist that you didn't see. And it's like, that's not, listen, it's not fun when Columbo does it. It's fun when Poirot does it.
Yeah.
Because like, they've been peppering things for you to look at through all of that story.
Well, I mean,
that's just not.
The reason why it works with Poirot from like a universe perspective is that Poirot is not a cop.
Right.
Poirot works with the police sometimes.
Yeah. But he's a private detective.
He's a private detective, and 90% of the time when he's doing that, he's usually doing it in some unofficial capacity.
Yes.
Like, hey, I've got everybody here. I'm just, as a private citizen, going to tell everybody through all the evidence that I have collected.
Also, I'm smarter than all of you, and I have a savage wit. And I won't give you an inch.
Cops can't do that.
No, cops can arrest people.
You would very much not want to get everyone involved in a crime into the same room and then just start throwing all of your evidence at them.
Yeah, no.
That would be a very bad way to be a police officer.
That's a great way for everyone to get their stories straight.
Yes,
immediately.
It would be a good way to guarantee somebody a mistrial.
Mm-hmm.
This... Very weird. It breaks down because he's a cop and he's not supposed to be doing this. And even in the conceit of the 1970s, this is not how police officers work.
This is still out of whack. Especially when you consider that he fucking has Mac here under his wing. Like,
and
because...
Mac and George are there saying lines that could be given to... There's no reason for Columbo not to be saying them.
Man, I don't know.
It's just they included these two... other characters, I have to assume, in what was a soft launch of Mac and George Kramer as
companions?
Like second billing in this. It's kind of maybe like to bring them in,
I guess. Well, you did say it was the end of a season, so
maybe the thought was like, hey, if this is well received, then
I guess
we'll bring in these guys.
So maybe, yeah.
I can't imagine this episode was particularly well received. I am receiving it very poorly, personally.
Yeah, I know. watching it again is fascinating.
A bad episode. First time, second time. a third time, this is a bad episode.
So have you seen it three times?
I've seen it at least three times, yeah.
Okay. Well, let me know how it is the fourth time.
I probably will not watch it.
Well, I'm going to have to trick you into watching it again.
No, I don't think so. That's a good way. That's if you never want me to come over again, now you know how to do it.
That's too mean. But
so you think this episode that is not too bad is too mean to inflict on a person?
Well, only because I can tell how much you hate it,
yeah,
and how uncomfortable it makes you because it is so out of character for a show that you adore.
It's, yeah. I mean, the thing
I
is,
I know
is
that's that, what's at heart here.
It's like, so I'm going to talk about Star Trek for a second.
Yeah, you are.
There's an episode of Star Trek, the original series, called Star Trek Assignment Earth. In that episode, which was a soft launch of a different show, which was about an alien living on Earth in a talking cat, and he was going to, like, Terry Garr's in it. It's weird.
Okay.
In that episode, the crew of the Star Trek, the Starship Enterprise, travel back in time to perform historical research. They're just like hanging out in the past.
Yeah.
And it's out of nowhere.
Yeah, they're just like,
it makes no sense.
They're basically they're time, like, traveling tourists.
They're time traveling to, like, just see what it was like, which seems like probably not a good thing to do.
Spoiler and they alert, never did it's it. Not going to be as good
they,
as wherever you are in the future,
really
probably.
They didn't really do that again in the same way, in the same weird casual way. It was kind of a one-off thing. And it's well known, I hate things that break the format. That is,
yeah.
I mean, the
that's
thing is,
very true.
I think there are ways to break a format that are good, but if you're going to go to the trouble of destroying what is good about a show, you have to nail it. You have to absolutely nail it.
You have
it.
To bring something better.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
Because the point of the Columbo was to have this weird thing that was different from every other detective show.
Right.
So if you're going to just make it an ordinary detective show, you have to have a good. You have to
it's
do gotta it
be
good.
Better. It's well. Yes. It's here's the thing. It's got to be better than an average episode of any detective show.
Yes.
Because it has to rise so far above the norm when you are destroying the one thing that literally launched the show.
Yeah.
Which is, hey, what if we do a murder, but you already know, and you just get to see how he figures out
it doesn't it was have him. To be perfect, but you have to nail it. Like, if you're going to go for another genre, you have to nail it. And this one is, it's so incompetent, and it doesn't do the things that I want a Columbo to do, and so it's very frustrating for me to watch.
I mean, he's dead now, so I don't feel too bad saying, I mean, I still feel a little bad, but
yeah,
it's a little try hard.
It's trying, yeah, definitely. This is an episode that's like, this is gonna freak your fucking bean, guys.
Yep. Yep. Hey, guess what? It did not freak my fucking bean.
No, my bean is unfreaked.
It just made me super uncomfortable at how Joanna was portrayed as a super over the top drunk,
a lush in the parlance of the day.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Like to the point of just being non functional.
Yes.
Yeah, like that wasn't great.
No.
The constant, like, throwing red herrings. Watching people get made uncomfortable is entertaining, but it's not the same as...
I didn't care for his hand. Every time that he grabbed somebody, was like, back, can we just get away from him.
No, buddy, you can't come up.
No. It's okay.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, we have to, I know that we've probably mentioned it, but I just want to circle back to it because I think it's one of the most amazing / hilarious things in this episode is please watch Robert Vaughn anytime he is on camera because there are so many scenes where he just like, I hope that he was directed this way, but it really seems like he's just fucking checked out and is just like I need to not be in this scene
anymore. Seems like he hates being in Columbo. Like, there's a scene early on where Columbo is talking to him and they're standing next to the Commodore's boat. And he's like putting his face on the rail and leaning
his chin on the rail.
In the way that, like, a toddler does.
Yeah.
He seems like a petulant child that
like,
is.
I don't want to be here. Taken, I'm not enjoying
been
this.
Been taken to like a hairdresser's and is waiting for their mom to like get done getting their hair done. And he's just like,
And
then
like,
later he's like he's like lying over the boom, like just sort of draped across it,
sulking. He's sulking.
Yeah,
and that's the crazy thing is to me, like, if that was supposed to read as I am I don't want to do this. I can't believe I've been fucking roped into this. Yeah. This is my wife's fault. You know, like none of that fucking reads.
No, because...
And Vaughn's good.
He's good.
And I mean, that Hamlet, you know, vinyl...
that's true.
...that he released.
Yeah.
Maybe not so good. But
yeah, that's pretty terrible. But you want... If a man thinks that his wife has murdered his father-in-law and he is trying to cover up this murder... You would expect him
and to, your future is at stake.
You would expect some sort of tension from him or him to be present or concerned or look like what's happening.
Maybe a little more on the line instead of
even if
I can't believe I have to fucking cover up for this drunk.
Even if you were trying to convince the police that you thought that your father-in-law had been whisked out to sea and was possibly dead, you would want to see more excited. Like, you would want to see more present, I think, in the scene.
More in the moment.
Yeah.
And a little less, is the scene over yet? No? How about now?
I wonder if this episode was hell to film. Because everybody has, like, a little bit of an air of, like, I don't necessarily want to be doing this.
I think this is the point where, like I said, I think they gave McGowan more rope than they should have.
Yeah.
And I think everybody found out what it was like when Patty McGee has a vision.
I would be interested to see, you know, if there's any behind the scenes stuff. I couldn't find any when I was doing research on it. But it just seems like I would say troubled. This seems like there was a troubled production.
Yeah.
But the specificity of that trouble is unknown.
Yeah. I mean, again, it kind of circles back to that. Like, everything feels like it's shot mostly, you know, like on location, like all of those kinds of, you know, like it's got the telltale marks of, you know, we're going to do this big, cool thing.
Yeah.
And then Columbo, who is, how do you say, notoriously uneasy around boats. Is never uneasy around boats in this episode.
No.
And then at the end, hops into a fucking dinghy and rows himself out into the water.
To the tune of This Old Man.
Yeah, but like a very slow...
A mournful This Old Man. And he's whistling and he's sitting in the wrong part of the boat to be rowing the boat. It's just, there's just a lot happening.
Yeah, I mean, that's all of the stuff where it's just like, I don't know.
I don't know what you were going for. Because
you didn't watch any of the other episodes of the show.
There was enough. You're in two of them, Patrick.
But you know what I mean.
But
certainly didn't bother to go back and look at a script and be like, oh, he doesn't like boats.
It just feels...
Also, I mean, I got to get after the writer for that, too. Why would you agree to... I mean,
we don't know. We don't know how much of that was in the script as delivered.
Yeah,
we don't know necessarily where the buck stops. I mean... Patrick McGowan, as you said, a writer and notorious for he liked to monkey, right? He liked to get in there. So I mean,
he is definitely a man who certainly had a vision and had his own moral compass and a lot of stuff. I know I've mentioned it
there
before,
but
he turned down the role of James Bond because he felt that James Bond was too immoral.
Yeah, you did mention that. Yeah. This is a...
So who knows? What so crazy
there,
shit.
There may be some uncredited rewrites on this.
Hmm.
Certainly that scene is unnecessary because the thing that where it's like, oh, or I thought you were about to quit, Columbo, and he says, No, maybe not. And then cut to a 3-minute scene of Columbo going out to a dock, getting on a boat
and
rowing it out to sea. And nothing happens from him saying, no, I'm not quitting, to him leaving on the boat, which is, I guess, supposed to be metaphorical for him in going into the future of Columbo or something like that.
I don't know, man. I mean, you'd mentioned that there was, I guess, speculation that
maybe he would stop. But yeah, at the end
of this point. But it's one of those things where, like, so if that throw in at the end was like a nod to that, it's lost in the annals of time.
Yeah.
You know, because I certainly didn't catch that reference. But I did have a moment where that went down and I thought, wait, was the whole, like, my wife says I got to stop smoking these cigars, they're bad for my health, blah, 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 thing that he lays out early on about not actually smoking, like, was that supposed to be symbolic of him leaving the show? Like, what the fuck?
I mean,
and that's also an indicator of how messy this episode is.
Yeah. it's a lot of ideas, and yeah, and almost none of them are executed.
Hey, but I mean, Swanee's boater blazer at the beginning is pretty hot.
That's true. The Commodore's outfit is
Commodore's
pretty snappy.
Outfit is would you say that would be Colonel Sanders at sea?
A little bit, yeah.
It's a navy blazer, but it's got the Colonel Sanders like silk bow tie, bow tie.
He's got a old timey baseball hat, is what it looks like. I'm sure that it has a different name, but it looks like
I'm certain it does, but it
looks like a ball cap that like the
but not
1910, you know, San Francisco Dodgers would wear. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff like that. Like, I mean, Robert Vaughn is Robert Vaughn, so he's good looking.
Well-tailored,
like,
if not particularly excited or remarkable.
No, if
in any
very
other
checked
way.
Out of this episode, and probably extremely relieved to be murdered halfway through.
Oh yeah, because he got to get that check
and get
home. Out of there.
Yeah. But like, yeah, he's wearing like a I don't know. It's probably like a wool like CPO jacket, like a shirt jacket. You know, over like a roll neck, you know, like there's little things like that, but there's not like any standout. I was too distracted by trying to make sense of this fucking episode.
Yeah. It is a journey.
Yeah.
It is a journey. And
I do think
I would say it's a journey not worth taking, but
I disagree, but
only because you like looking at train wrecks.
So it's a mix, man. But I do think a lot of it is that like touchstone of, hey, this is what happens when you break your format.
Yeah.
When you really like swing and miss. And I think that's useful.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, and I think it's fascinating because it's so weird and it feels so weird that it's like,
it's instructive almost.
Yeah. Well, it's the thing you were saying where it's like, where you were like, this is probably a troubled production. And it's that. Yeah. It's that you can see this thing and feel that somewhere underneath something was up, and you want to know what that is. Maybe everybody didn't fight. Maybe they thought they were doing something great, and then it was just a wet fart at the end. I mean, Robert Vaughn didn't seem to think he was doing something great. So
Robert Vaughn did not want to be there. He was so tired of Columbo, and he never came back. This is, I believe, his final.
That was the nail in the fucking coffin.
I'm good. Actually,
which is
that
a shame.
May not be true.
He was fun.
I'm probably lying about that.
Yeah, it's fair. I'm done.
You're good?
Yeah.
I think you hit the wall.
I think we've talked about this episode enough. It's weird.
It's weird.
It's not good.
No.
I don't think it's so terrible that you have to skip it. But I don't think you're going to watch it more than once.
No, I can't. I can't recommend it personally, having now seen it.
I'm not
going
to ask anybody to watch it as many times as you have.
Yeah,
I might watch it again, but also
I watched it a while ago, and then again when I went through before we started this podcast, I went
you were
personally
doing a refresh.
Through all
yeah.
of them. This third time it's.
I know.
It's
I watched
stuff.
You. I watched you get real uncomfortable, like almost immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very glad that. Mac will not be back because
that's a relief.
He added nothing and just added confusion with my own name. So
he was fine, but it's just this thing where you're like, I don't see the point of bringing in another character into this. It's not like
that actor was on Rockford Files, and I saw him on Rockford Files. He was perfectly good.
I know I've
as,
seen him
as
elsewhere.
A similar, he was very charismatic, but in this one, he is literally just saying obvious things that don't need to be said or that Columbo could have said.
Episode 37 is not where you turn a, you know, feature piece about Peter Falk into an ensemble.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not.
You don't turn it from a one-hander to a three-hander.
Thank you.
out of nowhere.
Yeah. It just didn't work.
It's no good, in my opinion. So I think that'll do it, unless you got anything else.
I do not.
I feel like we've done it.
Nope, I'm done. I'm done. I want this in the can.
Oh. I don't think that's what you meant to say. So that's going to do it for this episode of Columboys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And just one more thing.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have to watch that episode ever again.
Okay, that's fair.
That's not bad.
Yeah, I'm never going to make you watch that again.
Okay.
Not even by tricks.
Are you going back?
I might go back.
Oh, boy. Well,
but not more than once, probably.
Let it be on your head.
We'll see.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.